It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley are here, and believe it or not, it's a very big anniversary, the fifth anniversary of the ascension of Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella. An assessment of how these past 5 years have gone. I'll give you a hint. It's been pretty good. Also, the newest version of Windows. We'll talk about Microsoft's HoloLens 3 and a recap of their second quarter performance. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 607, recorded Wednesday, February 6th, 2019. Software you love from people you trust. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. From the founders of Carbonite comes the cloud storage technology that's disrupting the industry. See for yourself with free unlimited storage for a month. Go to wasabi.com, click free trial, and use the offer code Windows. And by LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Secure every password protected entry point to your business and reduce the threat of breach at lastpass.com/twit. It's time for Windows. This is the
Peter Brady's losing his voice.
Iglesias version of Windows Weekly. Hello, everybody. I'm Leo Laporte, and your jolly host. And this is Paul Facebomb Thurrott.
Believe era share there.
Thurrott.com and leanpub.com. Gracias, Paul. And that is... that's an inside joke. And that is Mary Jo Foley on your left there. Did I pan you guys again? I forgot to pan you guys. I'll pan you later. Did we ever get feedback on how you were in the left and right channel? Did people like that?
No. The audio panning.
Audio panning.
Oh, yeah. I never heard anything about that.
Probably we're mono and no. It's like just personal fun. Yeah.
I mean, if people don't like it, they could fix it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they could.
Yeah, no, they totally could. Yeah. Hmm. Totally. So, this is an auspicious day in history.
It is.
The day after the 15th anniversary of Facebook.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. But more importantly, our hero is 5 years old today. I'm talking about... Who am I talking about? Mary Jo Foley.
The only Satya Nadella.
This is the fifth anniversary. I vividly remember our shows, which went on for months, talking about who might be the CEO, who's the candidate. Mm-hmm. And they had, Meg Whitman, Alan Mulally.
Mulally was my favorite choice.
Former CEO at Ford.
A lot of people thought it was going to be him.
Then it changed to Satya who?
But in hindsight,
in the early days, Stephen Elop was kind of a favorite of many, and then Mike Lowry.
About Stephen Elop.
Yeah, there were so many.
He came in the Nokia acquisition. He was the Nokia.
Well, came back. Originally from Microsoft. Remember, right, he ran their office business.
Right.
Kevin Turner even was bandied about at one point, who was the COO, and a lot of people at Microsoft freaked out about that because he was not that popular. Mm-hmm. With the employees.
Well, him and his mustache are gone.
They're gone. Yep.
Can we say with some certainty that they actually, even though no one realized it at the time, did the best possible thing to hire Satya Nadella?
With Satya Nadella?
Yeah. All those other names sound so pathetic in hindsight.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know what the big difference is between him and most of them is that they are either old guard Microsoft, right? Which is really what the company didn't need and doesn't need.
Right.
Or just old guard CEO types, which, we'll never really know.
Yeah. Alan Mulally's not going to really cleverly say,
he could have been like the Gil Emilio of
exactly.
Microsoft.
I think many of those that you described.
Yeah, just from outside the industry.
Yeah. I mean, how do you put somebody in charge of Microsoft who's never worked in tech?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like we have an office in Office 365. It's like Ford and Mercury kind of.
Exactly.
It's just think of it that way.
But you know what? I feel like when I remember the day they announced Satya Nadella was going to be the CEO, which was February 4th. My first thought was, oh, you know what? It's going to be the same old, same old. I really did think that because he had been there already 20 plus years and he wasn't a real household name. But I was thinking, okay, what's he really going to do to shake things up? He's been here too long. He's already kind of accepted the way things are. But that was so not true.
Right. So, yeah. Right. Well, you know, but you know what? Nobody outside the company knew him. Right. It was impossible for you or anyone else to have guessed the change agent that this guy would be, and just the his whole life perspective that has permeated the company is something no one knew anything about. You never would have heard about any of that stuff if he was running Bing or, you know, an executive on the server team or whatever he might have done.
Do you think internally they knew though? I mean, there must have been people internally.
Yeah, they knew him
this
internally.
Guy's the right guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've been promoting him up through the ranks, and his last job, I think, was head of server and cloud. So they knew he had the potential to do this, right?
It's possible there was evidence of this in his own organization at the time. It's equally likely that there was I don't know if it took the form of an actual questionnaire, but, you know, obviously you go through the process of trying to become CEO, and you there's obviously a back and forth that occurs. And I think, you know, what is your worldview? How would you change Microsoft? You know, I that has to have been part of it. And I think they were just intrigued by his responses to those kinds of questions.
Yeah. You want to hear a weird coincidence. So, you know, Ballmer had already announced he was leaving. Like that was already done. And so I was doing a story about, I was the last person to get Steve Ballmer to interview him. And so what they did was they had me go around and interview a bunch of people who had been his direct reports. And I talked to all different people in the organization. And the last person they had me talk to was Nadella. This was in 2013, so the year before he took over. And I kind of felt, in hindsight, like it was an audition in a way.
Oh,
not
really?
With me, like making the choice. Yeah. But
they were saying, how do you handle the press?
Yeah, let's see what he does here, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So my personal connection to this is that one of my best friends at Microsoft was Satya Nadella's speechwriter.
Oh, wow.
And Ward. And when he became CEO, I thought, I was like, here we go, baby, I'm in. And Ward was no longer his speechwriter.
Did you want to become Satya Nadella's speechwriter, or did you just think, oh, here?
No, I figured I have a direct line to the CEO. Yeah. This is going to be amazing. And of course, all the people who were around him in the server biz or whatever were out because now you're doing it. This from the corporate
level.
Time.
This
now
is a big whole, time. Yeah. Yeah. Chris Cappicella is going to get some say in this.
Yeah.
And they knew Ward was a completely leaky sieve to Paul Thurrott. So you cost him his job. I don't want to say anything, but.
Ooh.
Yeah. No, thank you for bringing that up. I probably did, actually.
No.
No, actually, I feel like he
ended up leaving Microsoft, but that had nothing to do with it. He was just.
Yeah. No. He was like, yeah, I can leave.
I've been watching PBS's Victoria, all about Queen Victoria, and it's kind of like Queen Victoria, where now you're playing in the big leagues. You got it's all different. You got a nice new robe to wear, you got a better hat.
I'm sure. Queen Victoria's England is being like the Addams Family, where everything's kind of black and it like wrought iron.
That was after Albert died. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go into Queen Victoria's story because it's not really germane. But but it is. It must be, or going from being a governor to the president or whatever. It's a big. It's got to be an interesting transition.
I know.
And Nadella's handled it like superbly. He took it was really because of what was his very first act.
First act was bringing Office to iPad. Like that was one of his biggest.
Surface Mini.
He did that too.
Wasn't that very first thing out of the door? He says, "Oh, and by the way, we're not doing that." And I hate Nokia.
Right. Here's the thing. So I would say those are very the iPad Office thing was obviously a public thing, right? So, and I'm sure to the world that was a, oh God, this is not, you know, Ballmer's Microsoft. They didn't just invent it when Nadella showed up.
Yeah.
No, Ballmer, that was Ballmer's decision to make that happen. Yeah. And then Nadella got to execute it, right?
But it's like when you go to prison. I don't know if you've ever been to prison.
But please,
you got to establish your dominance right at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So you go to the biggest. Normally you shiv someone, but he decided to.
Instead of shivving someone, he shivved Surface Mini.
Right.
But I'm not. I'm kind of being facetious, but I'm not really, because that you. He was very,
very much against it.
But he was also very decisive from the beginning. Right. He didn't say, "Let me get the hang of the lay of the land here for a couple of months." He went in there.
He had a mandate, right? And I think none of this stuff was a surprise to anybody, right? So his feelings about Nokia, his feelings about Surface Mini, you know, whatever. I think these things were well understood before he showed up.
And when they hired him, they knew.
Bored,
I guess.
I think, Mike, you know, this is. Honestly, as much credit as we will and should give Satya Nadella for what he's done, I think that Microsoft institutionally deserves a lot more credit for understanding the position it was in and how it needed to change, and that a guy like him was necessary to drive that change, that Bill Gates coming back or some guy who had been at the company for 18 years, very visual, you know, obviously in line to be CEO, was not the right way, that they couldn't do that. That one of the issues with Steve Ballmer is that he was the George H.W. Bush of that thing where he was going to continue the tradition of the previous guy. You know,
and that wasn't completely a mistake. To be fair to Ballmer, the company did very well.
Oh, no, of course. I didn't mean it like that. But when you want to but the world has changed now. So it's years down the road. Everything's changed.
No, I agree.
Microsoft is going to slowly disappear.
And Bill's not coming back, baby. So.
Yeah.
Let's do something new.
You have to give them credit for doing this. Most companies can't.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's incredible.
This is a case study in business school now.
It is. It should be.
It should be. It's such a rare thing. You know, you got Steve Jobs coming back to Apple, and you've got Microsoft pivoting, basically, turning its back on its traditional moneymakers to go to the cloud.
Compare it to Apple, right? Apple was ready to go out of business. Steve Jobs kind of came back and then really came back. And he was able to institute great change at Apple because there was no alternative. They were going away. Microsoft had billions and billions of dollars and huge businesses and would not be disappearing for decades to come. But they still understood that they needed to make this change and made it. It is super impressive. It really, really is. Because they were on a path to become irrelevant over time. You know, not immediately. Things like that don't happen quickly. But for Microsoft to make that dramatic of a change when they made it is, I think it's a triumph.
Yeah. You know, the people, I wrote a thing this week talking about looking back at 5 years. And it was very interesting to get comments on this on Twitter and kind of see where the line was drawn. Like most people were saying like what we're saying, which is it's amazing what he did. And, you know, it's really quite an accomplishment. The people who don't like what happened are consumers, right? And they're the ones who are like, I hate that he's a CEO and he killed everything I loved, the Windows Phone and the band and Groove and like that guy.
So that's about 100 people.
That's a problem. It's more than that.
No, it's not that.
That's
it's
the just, problem it, with Twitter it, is it amplifies a small.
I know. It does.
But that's not really.
If there were that many people using the band and Windows Phone, it'd still be around. Let's face it.
That's not the issue. This came up most frequently during the Windows Phone demise, right? Because there was a sizable user base. I realize it was a small percentage of the overall user base, but. They were very vocal. You know, they're like a lot of technology guys, like people who loved the Amiga back in the day or whatever. They felt really strongly that this thing that wasn't doing well was so much better than everything else.
Yeah.
And they couldn't understand why.
I still have
you know, the company would get rid of it.
Saying, why did they kill the Amiga? That was the best thing ever.
Among those people.
You're among those people.
But when you look at it pragmatically like he did, it was... As hard as it was, as terrible as it might have been to fans of that platform and the other things that Mary Jo and you mentioned, it was necessary, right?
Yeah.
This really was never going to be a focus or a major business or whatever, or super successful. It just wasn't.
Right.
And, you know, it's hard to, you have to separate the emotion from the...
You do.
The real life stuff.
Well, clearly...
But the Amiga was absolutely the best computer. Goddamn...
I can remember for a decade talking about Microsoft's stagnant stock price. And
oh, yeah.
Yep. We were, you know, people like John C. Dvorak and I were saying, well, we don't get it. Microsoft, I mean, they're doing so well. Why is their stock price flat? Apparently the market knew something.
Well,
and I should point out that since Nadella's tenure in the last 5 years, it's tripled the stock price.
So one of the things I don't think people, I think some people who listen to this podcast will understand this and say, yeah, of course. But other people who don't follow Microsoft as closely may not know this. The reason Microsoft's stock price is up is because they did this really smart thing where they got Wall Street to stop looking at shrinking windows and instead to look at growing cloud, right? Even though the cloud business is small compared to the Windows and Office business, they said, hey, look over here. See this commercial cloud thing we're making up? Go look at that.
That's what Apple has accomplished with its services business. It's the same thing.
Yep.
Tiny, tiny business compared to iPhone. But it shows great growth. Of course it does. Right. It's small. You know, the thing that's interesting about Azure in particular, but I would say Microsoft's overall cloud business is, generally speaking, is that they achieve great growth even after achieving great scale. And that is the mark of something successful. So, you know, Microsoft's cloud businesses combined today are bigger than Windows, but Microsoft's individual businesses, the cloud businesses are a hair smaller than the business that runs Windows for sure. But Windows Azure, see how easy that is? Azure a year ago had 76% growth. Azure this past quarter had 76% growth, right? Wall Street is complaining because it's not 90% growth like it was 2 years ago. Guys, it's a humongous business.
Yeah.
76% growth is crazy.
Plus 76% growth on a much bigger number that we don't know.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's the point. When Azure was nothing, 100% growth year over year was, I mean, God, of course, you should be doing that. 76% this far in. When was Azure announced? I mean, how long ago was that? It was a long time
ago.
Yeah, 10 probably
years
10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I know. Yeah, but that was one of the things that he and his team did that was so smart, because instead of every quarter, it was like Wall Street's looking at Windows going, it's starting to shrink. And, you know, here's Google over here with these cloud services and you guys don't really have this. And they're like, hey, let's do this. Let's make them look at this number. We're going to say we're going to get to 20 billion by a set date. And they did.
You know,
they, of course, made that, right?
It would be a fascinating thing to kind of examine the many, many ways in which they tilted the conversation through such things as private clouds, which is just a renaming of something that's the old thing we used to do, but now we're going to call it a hybrid, you know, a private cloud, you know, hybrid clouds that combine, which are really for a lot of businesses are probably just simple on-prem servers that access some online service like anyone would in the 21st century. But now that can be called a hybrid cloud. And Microsoft, they're the only ones that have a hybrid cloud, you know, or a major hybrid cloud. I mean, it's a very effective form of marketing. And I think that's what impacts Wall Street, right?
Me too. It doesn't
have to, I mean, it isn't always, but in Microsoft's case, I think the reality of Microsoft's fundamentals was very strong during the Steve Ballmer years when the stock price literally went nowhere for like a decade. But since Satya Nadella's taken over, there's a, you know, it's got that new Microsoft smell. It's exciting and it's fresh and it's new, and some of it isn't, you know. I mean, the biggest business they have, it always cracks me up, more personal computing, is comprised solely of old school businesses that nobody kind of wants to talk about anymore. It's like Windows, Xbox, you know, Surface. They have nothing to do with the cloud for the most part.
Yeah. The other thing he did well, and it continues to do well for them, is the whole focus on partnering. Because, you know, the old Microsoft was dog eat dog, choking throats, cutting off air supplies. The new Microsoft
love
everybody.
Not a big fan of the Kumbaya stuff.
Right. We'll partner with everybody. We love Red Hat. We love SAP. We love these guys.
But you know what? But if you then turn around and shiv that guy in the back, then I would applaud it. But literally, they're just embracing these people.
They are.
You in the shiv. Do you even know how to make
the
shiv?
Yeah, man. Ooh. But yeah, the whole focus on partnerships and being a good open source citizen and all these things, it's like, how can you say this is bad? Like, it's great, right? Everybody loves it. It's and this has helped them. It's helped them a lot.
For sure. Yeah, you can't argue with it. Or, I mean,
I know. I mean, for us as journalists, it's not as fun. It's more fun to cover companies when they're fighting than it is when they're friendly, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. It's the only thing that's made the last 20 years interesting, honestly, is when these two or more of these companies face off against each other, like some kind of Godzilla versus King Kong thing in a crazy Japanese movie, you know, where like it's awesome. Like the rare occasions like Samsung and Apple in court, or Microsoft, obviously the antitrust stuff, or any of the antitrust stuff, Apple, Google, whatever. That stuff's awesome. Qualcomm, Apple today is like that. You know, these companies deserve each other. It's excellent. But now, you know, Microsoft, they're like, we love everybody. It's like, what's going on here? It's like a cult.
I mean, like Microsoft executives from Office showing up on an Apple keynote stage and being like, you know what? Apple invented this thing and here we are with Office to support them. It's like, wait, what?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and doing Touch Office first on iPad.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
As you say.
But it's pragmatic. That's the word I think Mary Jo has in the notes. And that's exactly what if you had to describe this guy in one word, pragmatic. You look at stuff that I think previous leadership teams might have said, oh, God, you know, Surface is kind of going gangbusters. Let's just do the Mini, even though it doesn't make any sense. Or, you know, well, we did spend one Nokia. Like, why would we throw that money in the trash? Let's just try it. You know, let's try it again. Mm-hmm. And he looked at it more pragmatically and said, no, no, no. And then he said yes to things that, you know, either wouldn't have happened or would have happened much more slowly under previous regimes.
Also wrote off the Overture acquisition.
The ad thing?
Yeah.
I think that happened before.
Quantive?
Quantive, I mean. Yeah.
Quantive, yeah.
I think
Quantive.
That was Ballmer, right?
Ballmer, okay.
Yeah, I think so.
But, okay, and, you know, we want to be balanced. We're journalists here, so we've been praising this guy. But I got to point out, Mary Jo Foley, how many times, you've interviewed him, right?
Yes, I have.
Did he ever notice your shoes?
He never did, but you know, I will say he wears some of the nicest shoes I've seen on an executive.
He should. He makes more money than almost every executive in the United States.
That's what I'm saying. Ballmer noticed your shoes.
Right. Sure. You remember that. You remember that little tidbit.
Yeah. Yep. Nadella is kind of self-centered. He wears the shoes. Just saying.
The problem is he doesn't use the shoes for kicking ass.
No.
You know?
No. And he never jumped across the stage saying, developers.
He did not. No. He did not. Sure. But I will tell you, in the couple times I have gotten to talk to Satya Nadella informally, the thing that impresses me about this guy is how much he listens to you and actually answers what you're asking him as a question.
Wow. That's unheard of. I don't like to interview CEOs for that reason. Yeah. They just don't. They right. answer whatever.
They're always they're on message.
It's like, you know? There's three people you don't want to interview. Sports figures.
We came to play.
Politicians and CEOs. And it's because they're never going to answer your question.
Right. He can be very fluffy. Points. We've heard this. We've heard, you know, all the high level talk from him. And
what was it? That keynote.
The Ignite keynote was kind of a low point in my life. But
the 4-hour.
Paul had to keep me sane on that one, which is scary.
But, that's right. That's right.
Right. But when you get him in a one-on-one.
She threw a little shade. I just want to point that out.
No, she's right. Usually she's the one talking me down from the cliff. One of the things we can, you know, we throw things off of each other. And so I will often go to Mary Jo and say, do you think this is a little too strong for Twitter? And she's like, are you crazy? You know,
I'm glad. See, you have somebody to do that. It's important, Paul.
Yeah.
That's important.
Right. Well, I don't usually get to do that for Mary Jo. She's very even keeled, as you probably noticed. Right. But, the Ignite, that Ignite thing, she was literally ready to explode. I've never seen that before.
No, I was just like, my God, is he going to say anything? Like anything? Like anything? Come on, say something.
I took her aside several times and I said, you can't do what you're planning on doing. And she's like, she was really upset. And I said, you just can't do that. And finally, she was like, okay.
I stayed sane in the end. But, you know, I think he's much better one-on-one. He'll ask you something and he'll actually like wait to see what you say and then he'll respond. It sounds so simple, but this isn't a simple thing.
Yeah.
Publicly, I think we've broached the issue with him and his role, I think his strength in a public forum where it's a, like a trade show, we're going to go to Build in a couple of months, or we'll go to Ignite again in September, October. I guess it's later in the year this year, but he shouldn't come out and keynote. He shouldn't come out and talk for two hours. He's a little too robotic, a little too light. I don't know how else to say. He doesn't really seem to say anything of substance, but that type of thing is actually nice when you're wrapping up and you want a high level overview. And I think that's what he does well. And he's done that in the past. Mm-hmm. And so I hope to see that. And plus, there's a big draw for people too. It's the CEO of Microsoft. A lot of people in those rooms are there for the first time and have never seen the guy live. Mm-hmm. And they'll look forward to that. And it will keep people in the seats. Not that they have a huge problem with that, for sure. But I mean, it's something for people to look forward to. And instead of being on there for 2 hours, you come on for 30 minutes. It'd be easier for him. I think it'd be better for everybody. But he does well at that.
Yep.
I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. If you look
at some of the stuff, you mentioned highs and lows here. So what are the lows? In your opinion.
In my opinion, I think he started off on a rough foot. I mean, he did what he had to do. Like we said, he was very pragmatic. But one of the very first things he had to do was lay off 18,000 people. Like, that was like his first year, right?
Well,
right. You know, again, like, you come in.
That may not be good for those 18,000 people, but obviously it was
good for the stock price. For, but then everybody at the company was kind of like, yikes.
But that's excess that was the result of something that happened before you got there, right? So
it was.
You know, it's like when a president comes in and the economy's going gangbusters and they kind of take credit for it, even though the things that impacted this happened months ago before you ever showed up. Mm-hmm. But when there was something negative, then you always can point to the previous guy and say, well, you know, actually, this never would have happened unto me. I'm just course correcting here. You know?
Yeah. If Andromeda never comes out, he'll be blamed for that by the people who think that will be like the most amazing device in the world. I actually think he's making the right choice in keeping it back because there's no value proposition that's different enough to merit it launching.
Yep, I agree.
But, you know, we know about it. So if it doesn't happen, everybody will be like, see, look at that guy. Like, he's holding back progress and he's not daring, right?
Well, I mean, Microsoft has never publicly acknowledged this product, right?
No,
I mean,
but it's pretty
They can always point to that. Well, but things get developed all the time, you know?
Yeah, they do.
So our car makers come up with these crazy shapes. They never see the light of day. No one's going to hold it over the head of the CEO that they didn't make a car that looks like a block or whatever, you know, because some group thinks that's an awesome shape or whatever it is, you know. It's a weird thing that we have to worry about that kind of thing, but
I know. I mean, but every time something happens where we think something's going to be this amazing thing and then it either gets killed or folded over, like Cortana's another one, right? They were so far ahead with Cortana and then suddenly it's like, hey, guess what? We're giving her much more of a backseat.
Was his anniversary literally 5 years ago, like this
February
week?
Is 4th.
That why this? Okay, yeah. It was February.
It was Monday.
I mean,
Monday, February
4th. What year did the Xbox One come out? Was that before him?
Xbox One? I don't know.
Was that 2014? I think it might have been.
Was it? Huh. Because are you going to call that a high or a low?
Well, it's definitely a low. And I mean that from the product.
Right. How it came out. Yeah.
The launch of it was a disaster. That product should have done a lot better than it did, and they've been scrambling ever since. Mm. Now, the one thing I'll say on the process,
right?
But you know, their response to that defeat has been amazing, and actually, kind of parallels the whole Satya Nadella thing. They've really, not because Xbox is now dominating the industry or anything, but they've embarked on such a gamer-friendly strategy, and are doing all the right things for the future. That they've really set up Xbox for the best possible future that it can have. And honestly, that's been, for me anyway, it's been kind of awe-inspiring to watch. That would never have happened, I don't think, if something bad hadn't happened first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Xbox One was announced May 2013 and released in North America in November 2013, so the year before him.
So before that. Okay.
But yeah, that's something that you have to think about with him too, as I noted in my piece, is when I think when he started as CEO, my guess was he was going to sell off Xbox. especially because he seemed very focused on the Enterprise. And then instead, they doubled down on gaming during his tenure, and they promoted Phil Spencer to the senior leadership team. And
this is incredible.
It's like, wow.
It's even more of a wow now, because as of today, Phil Spencer's on the senior leadership team. There was no one on the senior leadership team that directly is responsible for Windows.
Right.
I mean, in some ways, that's – and of course, part of it is just what Windows is, right? You can make a case, because they have done so with products like Office, where there's a transition to the cloud that makes sense. Server does this with online services like Azure. Xbox is going to do this with these xCloud and other online services. Windows, not exactly, right? That's the one big product they had from the past that doesn't have a seamless transition to make to this cloud first era. And that might explain it. I mean, that might be all there is to it.
I mean, except if you look at it through Microsoft 365, right?
Then it's just a bit player and something bigger, right? But the other stuff in Microsoft 365, the management stuff and the Office stuff, is far more online services based than Windows is. I mean, they're trying to service Windows like it's an online service. You know, with mixed results for sure. But it's very much, you know, it's a client platform. It just is. I mean, obviously it integrates with online services. But it's a different kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Ballmer era was about protecting Windows, if you're going to kind of put it in a nutshell. Like every decision was about, we got to keep our cash cow safe and protect it. And under Nadella, that just got blown up. And it's like, well, yeah, we have Windows, but you know what? That's not our future. We're not the Windows company anymore. And that's been something he's made a point of since the beginning, basically.
Yeah, we're going to talk about a major exception to this, but not unique to Microsoft, but just, you know, we cover Microsoft, so we see it very much in our world. This company has focused on changing brands so that Microsoft is the brand, and that the things that were products at one point or whatever are kind of de-emphasized. And they do that in different ways. They change the Surface logos on computers to say Microsoft. They change the name of Azure to, you know, Microsoft Azure. Office 365 is becoming Microsoft 365. Mm-hmm. It's not universal, but they've kind of emphasized this thing. And I think Microsoft as a brand is a good one. It's a name that people trust.
Boy, what a slogan that'd make. Software you trust from
people. From the company you trust.
From the people
software
you love.
From the people you trust. Good slogan.
I like it.
I like it.
It's familiar and yet unique.
Well, I think, do you want to talk about the senior leadership team, or SALT as it's known?
Yeah. You know, I do want to mention this, because so many times we attribute decisions being made at any company to the CEO, but the reality is they have a whole group of people around them. And if you look at Microsoft's senior leadership team, this is like the inner circle of people who make the decisions and who Nadella looks to when he has a hard decision to make. It's kind of interesting who's on there right now. We mentioned Phil Spencer is there, and nobody from Windows. So they have a gaming person, no one from Windows. The person who represents Windows on this team is Rajesh Jha, somebody who almost no one outside the company has ever heard of. Huh. He's the guy who heads up Office 365 and Windows and Enterprise Mobility and Security. So he heads up a huge chunk of Microsoft, but he's kind of a hidden, quiet player. Other big names on there, you know, they've got Judson Althoff, who heads up all of their commercial business, which is all their business sales. So he's a really big name. Guthrie's still there. He's one of the holdovers who's still there. Red Shirt, Scott Goo, still doing the cloud and AI stuff. But yeah, a lot of these people are new. The one who you hear everybody talk about as being a big and positive influence on Nadella is Amy Hood, who is the chief financial officer. Like whenever you talk to people, they're like, yeah, she's like gotten really taken a real hands-on role at this company, and she's helped push through a lot of the hard decisions. So that's kind of interesting. The CFO is doing that, right?
Same at Ruth Porat at Google is given a lot of credit. as a CFO for
CFO mm-hmm. of Alphabet and
yeah,
Google.
Yeah, actually should right. say Alphabet, yeah.
Which is kind right. of interesting. I noticed that during their conference call. Yeah. You know, the one thing those folks all probably have in common, which might not have been the case with, say, an SLT from 10 years ago, is that they're removed enough from the past. Scott Gu is an exception, but where they can look at these things in kind of a cold, calculated way and say, well, mm-hmm. how does this make sense for us as a company? Whereas yep. in the past, I think there would have been an emotional thing around, you know, Windows is the most obvious mm-hmm. example. Well, we got to keep doing this. We got to keep throwing resources at Windows or mm-hmm. adding new features to Windows every 6 months or whatever it is. And I think, you know, today you don't really see a push yeah. for that from the top or support for that maybe from mm-hmm. the top.
One of the true veterans on the SLT, by the way, is Chris Kapp.
Yep.
He's there still.
Yeah, but you know, Scott Gu, I was thinking, you know, he's come up through the company how he did, but he
yeah.
runs this thing, which is a big online engine now. And so mm-hmm. that's fine. You know, Chris Kapp is marketing. I'm sure Amy Hood has had her effect, not just on Satya Nadella, but on the company as a whole. I mean, I don't know how yeah. she does things. I don't, you know, we're not privy to these private conversations, but you have to think there's, you know, she's mm-hmm. going to pull out the giant parchment-based spreadsheet and say, look, this is where the money's coming from, guys. You know, like, we got to be smart about this. And
she was Nadella's chief financial officer when he ran Server and Tools. So they have a long relationship dating way back.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been 5 interesting years, and I think if he lasts another 5, which I don't see why he wouldn't, I think it's going to be 5 equally interesting years with more crazy, totally non-old school decisions happening.
Yeah, and I've not made an effort along these lines, but it would be interesting to kind of compare Microsoft when he took over to Microsoft mm-hmm. when he leaves, and then to do the same for Steve Ballmer. And I bet what you'd find without really knowing is that the Microsoft under Steve Ballmer looked very similar, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, there were a lot of reorgs and things. Microsoft's always kind of shuffled the decks as far as what the mm-hmm. businesses are and all that. But I think under Steve Ballmer, it was, you know, it started as kind of that traditional Microsoft we know from the past. And it you know, they were obviously making pushes into new areas and so forth. But I mean, I bet it very closely resembled the old Microsoft. Whereas I think this Microsoft, you know, we might not even recognize this company.
Mm-hmm. It's a great success. Yeah, it's a great success story. I think it's really Bravo. Let's take a break. When we come back, we can talk about the more down to earth, daily gritty grind of a Windows journalist.
The gritty grind.
Gritty grind. And twins. But first.
Yep.
I'll save that for your tip of the week, Paul.
Yeah, I did. I actually asked Mary Jo if she was cool with me saving it for then, because it is kind of a thing. But
it's a thing. I think the word I've seen is cringy. Cringy twins.
Yeah, I can see that.
Cringy twins that. Coming up. But first, a word from Wasabi. Wasabi. It's hot. Now, I'm not talking about the wasabi next to your sushi. That hot stuff is hot, but I'm talking about wasabi hot cloud storage. You know, people are really moving to the cloud. I mean, there's no question about it. Every company, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, hopping on that bandwagon. This is, we're talking about it. This is the trend of the decade. In fact, it's estimated that by 2025, there will be 163 zettabytes in the cloud. That's 163 and 21 zeros in the cloud. That's a crazy amount of data. And there's a good reason people are moving to the cloud. In most cases, it's efficient, it's affordable, and in many cases, it's more secure than your on-prem storage. You know that. Because it's managed, you know, professionally. But naturally, any company that's moving to the cloud or is in the cloud now has concerns, has legitimate concerns, and Wasabi is addressing those with disruptive technology that's turning the industry on its ear. When they created Carbonet, these guys are super technologists. You should, if you want to ever just read about an amazing serial entrepreneur, read about David Friend. Going back to, I think he was a graduate from Yale and started ARP, the synthesizer company. I mean, just fascinating guy. But he and Jeff realized that they created a way, which they patented, to lay data on disks sequentially, not in blocks, but sequentially, which is faster, more efficient. And it means that Wasabi, and they did this first for Carbonite, and then they said, we should do this for cloud storage in general. Take the technology we've really perfected over a decade and use this for cloud storage. And as a result, Wasabi is 80% less expensive, 80%, and six times the speed of S3, of the industry leader. Six times faster for 80% less. Plus, there's one tier of service. It's very simple. They do support the S3 API, so you already know how to interface with it. You already have all the tools you need. It works with everything that works with S3. But they have things that S3 won't do. For instance, they don't charge you for egress. Free, unlimited egress. You don't have to, no charge. They have, a category of data that is super valuable called immutable data that can't be changed. So if you're worried about ransomware or employees or whatever screwing your data up, you can designate certain data is immutable, and it's even more secure. That is fantastic. It's so well done. It's HIPAA, FINRA, and CJIS compliant. And they did something they also learned at Carbonite. They have something they call the Wasabi Ball, a physical drive which lets you migrate petabytes of data simply, quickly, securely, and get up and running fast. I understand. This is a new name to you. This is a you're maybe not sure about this. Everybody knows Google, Amazon, and Microsoft. That's obvious. I just want you to add a fourth name to the list. If you're looking for cloud storage, just add one more name. You make the decision. Although I got to tell you, the boss, the CFO, Ruth Porat's can be very happy when you say, I'm going to save you 80% for six times the speed. Go to wasabi.com. Click the free trial link. Now, the trial, it says a terabyte free for a month. If you use the offer code Windows, it goes to unlimited. So store a bunch of stuff up there. Really bang on it. Test it. And I think you'll agree, Wasabi is hot. Wasabi, wasabi.com. Use the code Windows. I'm not expecting you to just say, okay, Leo said so, I'm going to do it. I want you to go and try it and compare it to the big three, and I think you'll see why. We're really high on Wasabi. Wasabi.com. Enter the code Windows. Paul and Mary Jo Foley. We're talking, well, literally, Windows. Windows 7. More on the...
not the usual Windows.
End of life.
No. Yep.
But there's a hope.
Well, this was kind of an interesting little tidbit that I found out this week. So we knew that Microsoft was going to offer these things called extended security updates for Windows 7 to business customers, not consumers, and mostly large business customers. But we knew they were going to charge per device. That's what we already knew. But when we asked them last fall, how much are you going to charge? They said, you know what? You have to go ask your partner or your Microsoft rep. We're not going to tell you. Which made me think maybe there wasn't a set price list for this, but there is. I got my hands on the price list, and it's interesting because it's a lot lower than many people thought. Although if you have many devices that you want these things for, it's going to cost you. So if you're an enterprise customer, in the first year that Windows 7 is no longer supported by Microsoft for free, you're going to be charged $25 per device to get the extended security updates for the year. If you're on Pro, you're going to pay double. You're going to pay $50 a device. And from there, every year for the 3 years that this happens and is allowed, your cost, whether you're enterprise or Pro, is going to double. So year two for enterprise customer, $50 per device to keep getting those patches. If you're on Pro, $100 per device. Year three, if you're enterprise, you're up to $100 per device if you still want to keep getting these updates and not move off of Windows 7. Yeah. Windows 7 Pro users are going to pay $200 per device if they want to keep getting these security updates. If you don't do this, Windows 7 isn't going to stop working after January 14, 2020. But you just won't get any security updates, which is risky.
Yep.
So I had lots of people asking me, like, why is it so cheap? Like, I thought it was going to be millions of dollars.
So I have a theory about the price.
Yeah, what's your theory? Yeah, what is your theory?
It's low. It seems low because it would be low if this was something anyone could do, right?
Exactly.
If you as an individual could pay $25 and use Windows 7 for another year. I think a lot of people would probably do that.
They would.
But this is, I have the feeling, based on the wording, I went back and looked at their original announcement, which is actually pretty vague and pretty short. It's part of a bigger announcement. Yeah. I looked at the little chart and I thought about the, and you got a quote, right? You had, I think it was you who got a quote from Microsoft, which was also delightfully vague.
Yeah.
But the basic gist of this is you need to talk to your Microsoft contact. Like whoever it is that you're paying for your Windows license is the person you're going to go through. And I think what most businesses are going to find when they go through that person is, A, they never got this email with the pricing, and B, they're never going to get it because they're not going to be offered it. And I think the reason the pricing is so low is it is literally because Microsoft is going to choose which companies can get this and which can't. And it's going to be the biggest companies. And the net cost is actually going to be astronomical because of the number of seats that those companies might have. I think medium-sized, smaller businesses are never going to be offered this.
No.
Because I think there are, you know, especially the first year, I think there are some places that might say, you know, this is actually going to make more sense for it. This will be less costly than moving to Windows 10. So I that's my guess, is that this doesn't represent some kind of a retail value of this thing because it's really based on volume.
Mm. My guess was this is like an estimated retail price. Like this is what, you know, we'll, if somebody says how much is it, we'll say this price. But if you're a big, huge customer with like 100,000 seats that aren't going to be ready to move, let's make a deal, right?
Well, okay, that's absolute. By the way, that's true. That's a fact, right? So there's no such thing as a hard price for Windows in the enterprise. And that's why you don't, you know, that's why there isn't a cute little webpage, you know, how much does Windows cost, .com or whatever, where you can go and see the cost of Windows. You know, consumers pay a price for Windows, but businesses pay different prices.
They do.
You know, Microsoft got into trouble for doing this with PC makers, right? Remember back in the day? This was a thing. Actually, they probably still do a form of this, right? I'm sure the world's biggest PC makers pay less for a Windows license to include on their computer than do, you know, than does Bob's White Box PC company or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. My other thought was, well, one reason I don't think Microsoft wanted these prices out there is because they want people to think it's hugely expensive, right? So they want people to be like, oh, I got to get off Windows 7. This is going to cost me millions of dollars, right? Or it's low because they know many people won't be ready and they would rather see them stay protected and take security updates than go out there like cowboys and not take security updates and keep running it.
I did, you know, your notion of... you know, different companies might pay different prices. I had sort of considered this earlier, and I was imagining some company seeing this and saying, oh, great. You know, I thought this was going to be more expensive. Let's contact our Microsoft rep. And they come up with a price sheet for those guys that they push across the desk where it says, oh, no, for you, it's $150. It's not $25. Yeah. You know, and that's the thing. You know, there's a risk here if the prices are different. For different businesses, that what we've seen is a price that doesn't reflect, you know, what most companies are going to say, see in a negative way.
Yeah, that's a good point. So just to make it really clear to anyone listening to the show, most of you who are listening to the show, you won't be able to get this at all, right? You have to be a volume licensee of Microsoft. You have to be running Windows 10 Enterprise, preferably, or Pro. You have to be a big customer, basically. And I know a lot of people listening to this show are more like small business, or people who are like, yeah, I'm a mid-sized business. You probably won't even be able to qualify for this, I don't think.
Right. I don't know. Absolutely not.
Education, enterprise education customers will be able to qualify for this. But I've had a few people reach out to me and say, you know, I was kind of counting on this. I heard you talk about it on Windows Weekly. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not for individuals, right? It's not for you taking it and putting it on your home PC. That's not who this is for.
No.
Right. So this is a thing that pertains to bigger companies, but still it's, I thought the prices were very interesting. On one hand, I'm like, wow, that could really add up if you had a lot of seats. And the other hand, I was like, it's not that expensive.
What did you, I mean, I'm not sure I had a notion of the price. What were you thinking it was going
to be? So the way they used to do this was under custom support agreements, which were very much written for a particular customer, and they could be millions of dollars per year, like easily millions of dollars per year. That's why a lot of people were like, ah, I better get off Windows XP, you know, because I'm paying X million per year. But I, again, like you were saying, Paul, I think it probably varies by customer. Like the NHS, did they charge them millions of dollars per year to keep patching XP?
Oh, I hope so.
But maybe not, though.
Yeah.
Maybe less, no, right?
For sure. Yeah.
It's still kind of interesting.
The price doubles every year. Right.
It does.
Now, if you go back to the original announcement at last September, October, whenever that was, the wording they used at the time was just that the price would increase every year.
Yeah. Right. Right. They didn't say
doubling. Doubling is an increase. There's no doubt about that. That's a big increase.
It is.
Yeah. And do we assume that 3 years is it? They've only talked about we've only seen that. Can we assume that's going to be the end of that? 2023.
It depends how hard line they are about this. I mean, XP, they kept extending things because people weren't moving off. And I think they learned a lot of lessons from doing that. I guess it would depend on how quickly people move and how many people are still on Windows 7 by 2023. And maybe they'll reevaluate what the right strategy is then.
Do you think it's fair to say they'll never have this problem again? Essentially, right?
Right.
The way that Windows 10 works is, you know, the support time frame is shorter. They move people along to new versions, and companies also eventually move along to new versions. But I assume Windows 10 kind of solves this problem, right?
I think it does. Yeah.
Yeah. XP and 7 will be these kind of unique, you know, major upgrade things because of the nature of the software at the time.
I mean, even if you're on Windows 10 long-term servicing channel, there's a cutoff date for support, and I don't anticipate them continuing to extend that. They roll you up to the next LTSC version when it's available, right?
Right. I would think so. I mean, and the nature of Windows 10 is such that I don't think they've changed it enough where this would be hugely disruptive for most companies. Mm. I think kind of, even as I say that, it's
so many people say, like when I wrote about this, one of the big things on Twitter was, are people still on Windows 7? It's like, guys, yes. Like almost half of Microsoft's Windows installed base is still on 7.
I don't remember the exact numbers, but it's 40-something percent, and it's something like 600 million computers.
I know. And the reason isn't all just because people are afraid of Windows 10 or because their apps aren't compatible. I mean, there are a lot of different reasons people are on 7. Sometimes laziness. Sometimes, you know, my hardware won't run it, and I don't want to buy a new PC yet. I mean, there's lots of reasons. For businesses, it's tough to move tens of thousands of people.
As an individual... You know, it's like jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. You know, you don't break something potentially that works. You know, you don't screw with it just as an individual, right? As a business, especially when you rely on special applications. I think about this all the time out in the world. I go to the dentist and they have this dental app they use. The x-rays come up, they do scheduling on it. It's special made for this business. I don't know what the compatibility requirements are, but I can assure you that the people that run this dentist's office could not care less what version of Windows this is. They just need it to work every day reliably. No one screws with that, you know? That is the case in businesses all over the world, all kinds of different businesses.
Yep.
Just not screwing with something that works is reason enough not to upgrade Windows.
I mean, there's also the training aspect, although that's not as huge as it used to be with moving from 7 to 8, but still, 10 looks different. I mean, if you have users who are like, oh, I don't know where my cheese just went now because I moved to 10, you know.
Please don't store your cheese in OneDrive.
Right.
There's other
people. No, you got to use Azure for the cheese.
Yeah,
it's
we beg of you.
It's got the right long-term servicing plan.
It's got some blobs and stuff.
Don't put the cheese in the data lake.
Oh, that would be messy.
Somebody put cheese in my data lake. Ooh. Okay, enough cheese jokes.
Windows 10, 19H1. The reality is mixed.
We could spend about 15 seconds on this topic. So there was another build last week. It added Win32 apps to, or the ability to bring Win32 apps to Windows Mixed Reality. So I feel like, you know, I don't think Windows Mixed Reality has taken off in a dramatic fashion, but, you know, by adding mixed reality capabilities to Windows, they've made it easier for people to adopt this stuff and, you know, find apps and games and all that. So it's not like a negative if it's fine. They've certainly improved things since the initial release. There have been some big things in the mixed reality world. And, you know, the ability to see outside of the headset, for one thing, is kind of a big deal, right? I mean, that's one of the weird problems with it. You can walk into walls and stuff. And so I think improving the application compatibility with the platform is certainly smart. So I'm not. Yeah.
So we're still expecting that HoloLens rollout at a Mobile World Congress, right, Mary Jo?
We are. And I don't know if you heard, they are definitely streaming it.
Yes. So that means we'll definitely be here. You will be here at 11 in the morning. I will be here at 8 in the morning. And we will, because Paul's going to be in the auditorium.
He will.
Yeah, that was a smart move on my part. But I do love Barcelona. So maybe I'll stream
ham.
It too.
Yeah.
Stay for a bar somewhere.
So maybe we can get you on after our stream, because it's a Sunday morning for me. And I come in and do the radio show. But we will be covering that. We'll stream that live at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern. Is that February 20th?
20.
No, that's Samsung's event. Yeah, it's
it must be the week after. So it's the Sunday after.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
24th
is Sunday.
Are we excited?
We think it's the HoloLens 2, right? Yeah. So could be interesting.
Or I'd the like HoloLens 3 because they skipped 2.
Exactly. I'd like to see how different it is.
Yeah, me too.
They've had a couple of years.
They have.
And, 4 years.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
Since the announcement.
So there's been 3 years. To vamp it up.
Mm-hmm.
They've also learned a lot about the market, which has changed considerably in 4 years.
Yes.
Yep. I told you, like, I don't know if they'll announce it or not, but they're working on the ability to just use your hands to interact with objects in space, so it will do hand detection.
Isn't that
nuts? And allow you to...
Wait a minute. Using your hands to interact with objects in space?
Well, but today you really need a controller for that. Like, one of the big things that...
I can use my hands for that, but okay. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
No, but to grab an item and interact with it. I mean, it's
pretty soon mixed reality be real reality. Now we're
well, no, but I think it's one of the interesting evolutions of
it's
mixed
hard
reality
to do.
Because at the beginning there are going to be these. Remember the gestures like they had. Yeah. You know, we're going to do this stuff, and it's not precise enough. And so, HoloLens, like mixed reality platforms, eventually added controllers, and they're kind of funky looking in space. You know, they look like a Star Wars prop or something, but. They give you a way to interact with objects in a more precise fashion. And they're actually trying to overcome that, because obviously what's more natural than using your own hands?
Plus, you know, since HoloLens is being pushed more and more as a business device, a lot of these applications you're using it with are things like repairing something. So you want to be able to see your hands work with it, right? Mm-hmm. That just makes sense.
Sure.
Cool. So
if you get electrocuted in virtual reality, do you die in real life?
That's a good question.
God, I hope not.
We're going to find out.
I hope not.
So, February 24th.
So, the 24th, 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 Eastern. And Mary Jo and I will stream it at twit.tv/live. We'll be watching the Microsoft event and commenting on it. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot.
Should be fun.
Yep. And then there's Build.
Yep.
Gosh, we're going back. We just did Build.
I know.
So what's new?
Apparently, I've agreed to get a OneNote tattoo during Build.
Oh, boy.
Over the course of this podcast somehow.
What? But, wait, what?
Oh, boy.
I think on your head or where? Is
this Laura Beller. And
is Brad saying
it's a Brad idea.
He's going to do it. I can tell.
Nope, Brad's not. Brad would never get the tattoo. Look at him. He cries at the thought of a needle.
No, I meant he told you had to.
No. This is like Rich Woods and me and maybe some other people, I'm sure, by the time it happens.
What does a OneNote tattoo look like?
It's like the Zune tattoo, but without less self-loathing. So, no, it's a purple, like this, the purple, like I'm wearing a purple shirt. You know, it's like a purple.
Wait, are you really going to get a tattoo?
No.
I'm considering it.
Don't, Paul. You know, they can't be removed. You do know that, right?
Depends where he gets it. Where
Listen, I've done dumber things under the influence of alcohol than getting a tattoo. I
have a twit tattoo, which I deeply regret.
Uh-oh. Yeah, where is it?
It's on my butt.
Well, see, I remember you did that on the air.
I did it for a good cause for UNICEF. We raised a lot of money, but I still regret it. Right. I would actually pay that amount of money not to have it.
Oh. Right.
No, I don't feel that bad. I don't see it. That's the problem. It's my caboose, but my wife decides that every time she sees it, she has to say something.
Probably not going to put it on my butt. But
put it somewhere your wife can't see it. That's all I'm saying. Sure. Learn the lesson that I've learned hard way.
You got something. Why isn't that coming off?
Yeah. It's so annoying. But
we're going to Seattle. May 6th.
Oh, yes. Thank you for changing the subject back.
Guys, get off the tattoos.
Thank you.
May 6th to 8th, which is a Monday to Wednesday.
Yes.
Yep.
Overlaps slightly with Google I/O, which is May 7th to 9th. Why? Yep. Why did they do that again?
Not for the first time.
No, it's for the second time.
It is.
It worked so well last time. They said, let's do it again.
Yeah. Registration opens February 27th, which is pretty soon.
Yeah, wow.
Yep.
And they say on the FAQ on their website that the agenda will be posted in late February, but I don't think that means the session list. Mm-hmm. I think that usually gets posted much closer to the actual show.
Yep. Yeah, so I don't think they can have it that soon. They're not going to have all the talks, but
all kinds of people
will come and go before that.
Exactly. You know what's going to happen. AI, Edge, IoT, cloud. Will they talk about Windows? That's the real question.
It's sad that we've become a drinking game.
It's not a joke. I would think they would, if they're going to do Windows Lite, their Chrome OS competitor, this would be a very good place to talk about that.
I think so too. Mostly because BET just happened, and I actually think that wouldn't have been a horrible time to announce it.
Yeah.
Microsoft did do that special education event, I guess it was 2 years ago now, where they announced Surface Laptop. I mean, I suppose they could do something like that. But this seems like a developer thing. You know, the way Microsoft used to roll out things like this, remember they would go to the developers first, well, device makers first if they had to, developers next, and then they would kind of speak to the general public.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense.
Yeah. I would like to see them talk about like bringing more Win32 apps to UWP. I'd like to see them talk about Windows Core OS. But you know what? If past recent builds are an indication, we may not hear any of that.
I agree. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of cloud.
Cloud, AI, IoT. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, there'll be a giant book. It will have 1,100 items in it that they're announcing. And
the book of
four
news.
Or five of them will be sort of Windows related.
Yeah. Maybe they'll surprise us. Let's cross our fingers.
They won't, but yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but then we're going to think about when to do Windows Weekly that week, of course.
Oh, right. Because it's on a Wednesday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, right?
I know.
Well, we're probably going to be, I mean, we would fly home on Wednesday. I wonder.
Which day would be good if we can switch.
Yeah, I don't know what the possibilities are there, but.
I mean, it's kind of cool to do it. It's kind of cool to do it day one just because then you have all the fresh news. But we can see. Plus, we have to see how they're going to handle podcasting at the event, which we don't know. So.
Yep. Also, because of the time change, though, we might 11 o'clock might be right in the middle of everything.
Oh, right.
On Monday. But yeah, we can.
I'm open.
Could
you just tell me when the time comes?
Once we know more, I think we'll we'll figure it out.
It's not that far away.
Hopefully, we can do some kind of a live thing there, and you know, like we've done in the past.
Don't tell Alex.
Well, I mean, it's
he just came in the door and said,
"He's like,
well,
no."
It's months from now. It's fine.
It is.
It's 3 months from now. It's three.
Right.
This is we bought. This is like 5 months this year of him not having to do anything special.
Don't say that.
That's a good way to look at it.
for us, I mean,
for you, yeah. It's just for them.
Not that he's not special on a daily basis.
He is so special. He is so special. I forgot that Microsoft had a quarterly report, earnings report. Yeah. Anything important to say there? It's just business as usual.
No, not really. It's
just... Same old.
We had a good quarter.
No, this is definitely stuff to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I kind of took away from it was how everybody's been blaming chip shortages for earnings shortfalls. Microsoft didn't have an earnings shortfall, they did talk about chip shortages affecting things like Windows and Office, right?
I think they're making that up. This game, no, I'm not kidding. I think this is fake. Intel brought this up last September. Intel actually warned ahead of the holiday quarter that they had experienced an unexpected jump in PC sales. Yeah. Modest jump was their term. And they were scrambling to meet demand, you know, because you know how it is when you go to Best Buy and all the shelves are empty and there are no computers anywhere. Nobody can buy computers. That's nonsense. And the thing that's crazy about this is they weren't going to have trouble meeting the demand for high-end PCs, which are the premium computers, the gaming computers that are high margin, that actually make money. The problem was the lower-end stuff.
Right.
As if there was some wellspring of consumers that were like, I just want a $400 computer. How come there aren't all these choices at Best Buy or wherever I'm going for this thing? I don't think that ever happened. So PC sales fell last year. This isn't why. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And I was fascinated to see Microsoft use this excuse as well.
They did. Yep, they did.
And I don't think it's real. I really don't.
They used it across the board. I mean, they used it to explain why Office Consumer was down. They said chip shortages. They did.
Because I was going to buy Office, but I couldn't buy a computer first. I just don't. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
I think it's nonsense.
I even asked their head of investor relations. I said, how about the Windows 7 upgrade cycle? Like, are you getting a lot of, headwind from that or anything? And he's like, there's this chip supply issue. I'm like, wait, what?
Stop. Oh, my God. That's amazing. So I was curious what you're going to say there, because they were very – I love this kind of thing. You know, we've talked about we've used the term chatter, remember, to talk about pulling in information from various sources, like we work for the CIA or something. Microsoft uses the term signals, right? Same thing.
Right.
Amy Hood, during the post-earnings conference call, said, we know that the signals we get from especially our commercial customers is that there is a healthy demand for the value that exists in Windows 10. That is not the same thing as a healthy demand for Windows 10. That's crazy.
Yeah.
What she's saying here is nothing. No. And so question, did Windows 7 impact?
I'm excited, right? Like, I'd be like, were going to be like, yeah, you know what? We think there's going to be a huge uptick and blah, blah, blah. No, he's just like, yeah, no, it's going, but.
I can't guarantee, but I feel very strongly that this chip thing is nonsense and that Microsoft is not seeing the uptick from Windows 7 to 10 that they were kind of hoping for.
I'm kind of thinking that too. Yeah.
What can we blame? What do we got? Intel says there's a chip shortage. Oh my God, that's it. There is no way. There's no way.
It was very. It was a very subdued reaction to something I thought would be like, it's going to really ramp up. But
now this is going to be like a hangover. These companies are like, oh my God, is Windows 7 support is ending? How come no one told us this?
What was really up significantly in the quarter was Surface, which isn't too surprising given how many products they launched in the last part of the year. They had the Surface Go, Laptop 2, Surface Pro 6, the headphones, right? But they didn't talk about chip shortages for any of that.
Right. That's true.
That was great,
Well, you know what they did this year that I think was really interesting is they backed away in a very material way from their premium only strategy, right? And they did that in two different ways that really, I think, bumped up the volume of sales, which for a company, you know, for a business that's as small as Surface is very meaningful, you know. The first one, obviously, is they introduced a $400 computer, right? Yeah. Significantly lowering the entry-level price of getting into Surface, right? And I personally think that thing is garbage, but it doesn't matter what I think. You see something, it looks like a Surface Pro, it's $400. They're going to sell a bunch of these things. Of course they are. So that's done well for them. But, you know, the other thing they've done that I think gets a little less credit and needs maybe more attention is they've significantly lowered the price of their mainstream computers, primarily Surface Pro 6 now and Surface Laptop 2, right? If you look at the prices that these things were available at during the holiday season in particular, they were hundreds of dollars off compared to what their predecessors were a year ago. And that makes a big difference. And when you can, I just this week we saw something. It was like a Surface Pro 6 bundle with a type cover, $8.99. You know, that product a year ago was $12.99. I mean, it's that's a big difference. And I think we're seeing that reflected in the sales of Surface PC. I think it's smart. I think this is the right approach. Yeah.
Commercial cloud also was up. Our favorite metric.
It's not real.
Azure, Office 365, Dynamics, and some other cloud stuff all mushed into this group of things called commercial cloud is now hit this past quarter, $9 billion up.
Commercial cloud is like when you take all of the colors of Play-Doh you have and you extrude them through a single hole.
You get brown.
This kind of, you get brown. Yeah, you go black or something. Yes.
Yeah. Other than that, though, anything else on earnings? I mean,
one thing I wanted to mention was Xbox, because this is fascinating. Xbox overall gaming revenue was only up 8%, right, year over year. That was the same gain they had the year before, interestingly. Xbox hardware declined 19%.
Oh, wow.
Microsoft blamed this on the year-ago benefit from Xbox One 10, but didn't I guess that was – was that a year ago or 2 years ago?
What about chip shortages?
Chip shortage, yeah, because it is an AMD. Well, so anyway, that was down 19%, but the thing that saved the day, software and services jumped 31%. That's actually really impressive, right? It only grew 4% last year. But then in the conference call, what you find out is – this is classic – that growth is almost all from what Amy Hood said was the continued strength from a single third-party game title. Meaning
Fortnite.
What?
Wow. Hey, Fortnite, I even knew the answer.
If Fortnite hadn't happened, Xbox would have made less revenues than it had a year ago.
That's wild.
It's from Fortnite.
So they sell Fortnite stuff in the Microsoft store and they take a cut like Apple does? Is that what they're saying?
Yeah.
Because Fortnite's free.
In-app purchases on Xbox. That's what drove it. It's incredible. What an incredible admission. You know, so when you look at the information they provided at the time of the earnings announcement, you would have thought, my God, they had a double-digit software and services growth. This business is going gangbusters. No, it's a game that's available on all platforms. It has nothing to do with Microsoft. They just lucked into it. It's astonishing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And I love Xbox, but I mean, that's the crazy truth right there. That's really interesting.
That's why they need to become the Netflix of gaming.
Exactly. Yeah. And then Netflix can stop doing in-app purchases and screw them over.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like they did that.
But yeah.
Boy, that is actually a fascinating statistic.
I thought so.
That to me was the single biggest.
Yeah. I'm surprised President Trump didn't mention Fortnite last night in the State of the Union. Clearly,
he could have done like a Fortnite dance.
Has given us
the Urkel dance.
I'm learning. I think I can do it now because what I learned is that your hip goes the other way.
Are you doing the floss?
Yeah,
flossing.
I'm pretty sure that predates Fortnite, but then again, so do all of those dances, apparently.
But honestly, it's Fortnite is the reason the economy is in such good shape.
It probably is.
Clearly.
That it came from a company run by an insane madman is fascinating. But
what did Tim Sweeney make on it? Something like $3 billion? $7 billion this year.
Oh, wow.
He's a great guy. He deserves it.
Is he a nice guy? Do you know Tim? Can you get a loan? Can I borrow $10?
Fortnite itself is a ripoff. It's a ripoff of every
No, but
rail game that came before.
Except that shows, I think, a very interesting thing in this whole business, which is it's not the idea. Yeah, Battle Royale. It's all based on the Hunger Games anyway. But it's how you implement it. And PUBG, which was first in there and did it and lost to Fortnite, same game.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to be studied there in how.
Oh, there definitely is.
One, you know?
How you know it's big is that Call of Duty added it. You know?
Here's my prediction. Get ready. Yeah, they added a Battle Royale. They didn't have Fortnite.
Yeah.
Fortnite is the new social network for kids. They don't want to be on Facebook. Yeah. Facebook should watch out. They're worried about Snapchat and other. No, it's Fortnite.
Mm. You know what this reminds me of? I'm not going to remember the exact time frame, but it was probably the late 1980s. The late 1990s. Bill Gates was interviewed and he was asked about his competitors. And whoever the person was said, who do you consider to be your most dangerous or biggest competitor? And he said, Nintendo. Wow. It was like, wait, what? And I think that was the point of his answer, was to surprise the person, right? It wasn't, you know, WordPerfect, a Lotus, or, you know, whatever company might have been around at the time. Like, he was looking to the future and he was saying, this thing, you know, this company from Japan is super powerful and they're super popular. And Microsoft didn't have a gaming thing at the time. They didn't have Xbox. And what you just said is sort of similar to that. You know, you look forward to, well, how are these things going to evolve? And there's something to be said for it. I mean,
Can I just point out that Netflix has already said their number one competitor is not HBO, not Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's Fortnite. That screen time spent on Fortnite is actually hurting Netflix.
Well.
So.
They need to get a Fortnite TV show going then.
It's history repeating.
Yeah. Fortnite is, you cannot overstate how important it is. And the reason is that crossover mainstream success thing. I did this example with my wife the other day, actually, where my wife, who doesn't care about technology, certainly doesn't care about video games, has not heard of a lot of the things in our business that is kind of big news in our little world. But she knows exactly what Fortnite is.
Right.
Right. We go to a minor league baseball game. There's Fortnite all over it. They're doing Fortnite dances up on the Jumbotron. Like, this is a thing that has invaded mainstream society. You know, that's how big it is.
Wow. Yeah. Who'd have thunk it, right?
It's crazy.
I guess Battle Royale is even predates the Hunger Games, people are saying.
Well, I was going to say.
Started in wrestling. Sure. Unreal Tournament. Did Unreal Tournament have that one man standing, last man wins?
Oh, I'm sure they did. They had all kinds of different
games. They had a lot of things, yeah.
Yep.
I usually played Capture the Flag. So.
Well, I mean, one Unreal Tournament wouldn't have existed without Quake, which wouldn't have existed without Doom, which wouldn't have existed without Wolfenstein
3D. Commander Keen lost Planet Airmen. It all began there.
2D stuff doesn't count.
Yep. The first Voltrons. Use of the Battle Royale, according to Merriam-Webster, the first known use of the words Battle Royale, 1671. Thank you, Eric Duckman. And now, the moment Mary Jo Foley's been waiting for. The Xbox News of the Week.
You know, I usually start this segment off by telling Mary Jo she has nothing to worry about. This is going to go quick, but you have something to worry about. This is going to go slow. So,
no, that's good. Mary Jo, go make a cup of tea, pet the cat.
No, there's actually a bunch of stuff. Yeah, sorry. There is a bunch of stuff going on.
Speaking of Fortnite, did you see that the Marshmello, what did he stream? 100 million people watched him DJ in Fortnite.
That's the other thing that's crazy about Fortnite, is just the money. I think, honestly, the success here isn't the game type necessarily. It's that they've turned this into an esports phenomenon that could rival any real sports.
It's amazing. Fascinating.
Yep.
Now, in a year, probably be replaced by something else. But for now, maybe not. Maybe it'll have legs.
Well, but you know what? I think we've moved in a direction. I don't think it's going to evolve, but it started something.
I think it's a new social network. And it could be, you know, look at this Marshmello concert. It could be like Second Life. It could be where people, you know, the beginning of the metaverse.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't understand these kind of virtual. You know, they have virtual casinos.
I know.
What are you doing this weekend? I'm going to a virtual casino. It's, you know, I'll save some money.
Yeah.
I don't know. The steak restaurant probably won't be as good. I don't understand. What is that?
Well,
what,
you're not a big gambler. If you're a gambler,
no, you're literally just gonna boot up, go to a website and gamble. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah,
that's stupid. Okay, so with regards to Xbox, there is, like I said, there is actually some big news. One is that Microsoft is moving Xbox Live to mobile and presumably to other screens. I think the quote was, "We want this to be wherever you are." You know, and that makes sense when you think about X Cloud and that Microsoft will be streaming games to basically any device that you have. You could kind of foresee a future where these games are coming down to your phone, your tablet, your computer, obviously, and your Xbox, but your smart TV perhaps in the future, Roku, Apple TV, whatever it might be. And I think that's the point of it. But one of the things people are starting to wonder is if it means something beyond that. Are we going to see a growing collection of Xbox Live games on the iPhone? You know, that are literally games you buy in their store, but they go through the Xbox Live system and have achievements and, you know, support cross-platform play perhaps, or continue a game type of thing, which there are minor versions of this kind of stuff here and there. But this might be a much more formal push down that path. So it's actually really interesting. We'll see how that evolves, I guess. Microsoft, I think they own 13 game studios through acquisitions and then some they just recently started up. To date, that thing has been called Microsoft Studios. I mentioned earlier in the show that Microsoft typically is getting rid of product brands and using their own corporate brand. This is actually the opposite of that. They're going to call this thing Xbox Games Studios moving forward and focus on the Xbox game for branding. And, you know, Mary Jo mentioned earlier, there were various times, and this is true of me as well, thinking that maybe Microsoft would spin off or sell Xbox. I think increasingly Xbox stays under the Microsoft umbrella, but it is treated like its own thing. And that for the gamers that care about this stuff, the brand is Xbox. They think of it as Xbox. You know, for my kid, I think Microsoft had kind of a cool brand because Microsoft was Halo, you know. I think these days it's Xbox. I think they're trying to push that for gaming.
Interesting.
And this is just, I'm going to bring this up to see exactly what the games are. Sorry for the white light. But Microsoft today or last night maybe announced the games that will be coming this month to Xbox Game Pass. And there's some really, really good ones. Shadow of the Tomb Raider joins the initial, what was it called? Where is it? Somewhere in here. Tomb Raider Definitive Edition will be available tomorrow, along with The Walking Dead, the complete first season, which I actually completed. That's an awesome game. And then BMX Pro. But the biggest game perhaps this month is coming on, what's the date? Yeah, February 15th, Crackdown 3.
Right? Crackdown 3. That's the biggest
long
game?
Long delayed. What's that?
I thought Destiny clone? Isn't that going to be the biggest game?
It begins with an A. Anthem?
Anthem. I thought that was going to be the game of the month. Have we changed our minds?
Is Anthem on Xbox Game Pass?
Not on Game Pass. No, but on Xbox.
I think this is the biggest.
For Crackdown. Okay, for Game Pass. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, the reason it's interesting is because Microsoft has pledged in the past that all of its, what we're now call Xbox Game Studios games will debut day and date retail and on Game Pass. This one is Xbox One 10 Enhanced. It's a Xbox Anywhere game, so Xbox Anywhere. It doesn't sound right when I say it, but it will also run on Windows 10 if you buy it, and it will be available on Game Pass. I mean, as I was saying to Brad this morning, I mean, you could make a case, right? If you're not sure about Game Pass, pay for like 6 months of Game Pass. It's going to be basically the same price as buying Crackdown. You'll get Crackdown in the other 120
games. That was my rationale.
Games.
When Sea of Thieves, I bought it when Sea of Thieves came out.
It's a no-brainer.
It was cheaper than buying Sea of Thieves. Right.
And you know what Game Pass is? People have called it the Netflix of gaming. It's not technically because it's not, you know, you don't stream the stuff. But the way it is like Netflix is it is to gaming what Netflix is to TV shows, where it may not be exactly that NBC show you want to watch on Monday night or whatever, but they have this selection.
Right.
And increasingly, it's really high quality. And, you know, Batman Return to Arkham and Batman Arkham City are available on Xbox Game Pass now or will be this month. I mean, it's.
See, that's how I play games. But somebody like you, you sit down, you're going to always boot up Call of Duty. Right.
Which is a problem, right? So it's hard for me. It's an addiction, right? So let's be honest what this is. I mean.
But aren't you more representative, I would say?
I don't know.
I'm kind of the casual gamer. I'll play a game. Then next night I'll play a different game.
I don't know. The number of people who will only play the latest game in any one series, I don't know that I'm in the majority.
Oh, I bet you are.
I don't have a lot of evidence to back this up with, but I talked to my son about the. I already forgot the name. It doesn't matter. There's a new battle royale game that's out right now, and I've zoned on the name. It begins with an A as well. It's free. Huh. It looks awesome. It plays great. We'll see what happens.
It's just a matter of time. How long does it take to create a battle royale game?
But this game looks amazing. Yeah. So, like, one of the things that's interesting about the Fortnite versus PUBG thing is PUBG looks like a Call of Duty game. It's kind of realistic graphics. Fortnite has kind of cartoony graphics, but because of that, it runs super fast. That's
Apex. Yeah.
Apex combines the graphical quality of a Call of Duty with the speed of Fortnite, and it is amazing. So it's something to look forward to. So or look at, I guess it's out now. But my son is, over the years, he started out on early games, including, by the way, on all the Unreal tournaments on the PC. Very fast moving games, but he's played different things over the years. You know, recently it's been like Overwatch. He does Fortnite. We talked about this today. He's going to check it out actually today. I mean, I think that's more typical. Like, maybe you like some kind of game, you know, maybe like adventure
category. Games. Right. Right. Well, that's for sure. True. There's games. I don't play any driving games or sport games.
Yeah. But if you did, you know, there's some selection of driving games.
But I will play any first person shooter that comes along, and probably battle royales are the new hotness.
But I know from breaking the traditions, breaking the way that you do things is hard. And like, this is something my wife and I have done over the past year with TV, where we literally don't watch or even record shows on TV anymore. We just watch shows that are on series on Netflix and or on Hulu or on Amazon. And we like the ability to binge watch. We don't care if we don't have to see it live. We don't have to see it that week. We can wait. We want to see the whole thing at one time. And it takes a little while, you know. But I wonder if something like that might be possible for me in video games, because I look at this. I don't just say this is a no-brainer because I think I'm giving you good advice. This is a no-brainer. I mean, this should be a no-brainer for me. It kind of bugs me that I'm not taking advantage of this.
Well, that's why I ask, because I think that you're not in the minority. And the difference is, a video game, you have to spend some time just getting up to speed.
Yes.
It's more of a commitment than saying, well, let's just see if Barry's any good. You know, I mean.
But gaming for me fulfills a certain need. And based on my own schedule, there's a certain mindlessness to Call of Duty that I can jump into a game and jump out and I can work. I can jump into a game, I can jump out and I can work. These adventure games or like Destiny or whatever, you have to focus on that. And I don't have time to focus. Yeah, yeah. I can't do it. So, but I wonder, you know, like Call of Duty, $60. I play it for a year. It's another $60 for the get all the DLC. So I'm spending $120 a year just on Call of Duty. This would cost me less.
Right.
And I would get 100 and something games.
Do you get DLC if it's on Game Pass? Do you get every bit of the content? Probably not.
It depends on the game. So all of the stuff that happens through Game Pass is based on the publisher. So, for example, I'd have to bring it up. Let me see if I can bring it up. But there was an example of this. Let's see. Excuse me. I can't remember which one it was. But one of these games, but you were getting all the deals. I don't remember which one it was. I'm sorry. But, yeah, it depends on the game.
It depends, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think Game Pass is great for me, but I'm probably not a typical gamer because I want to see, well, what's Sea of Thieves like? Okay, I play it for 5 hours and then I'm bored. And then
I don't know what the size of these audiences is, but I think on the one end is the biggest audience. It's just casual gamers. They might pick up like a little puzzle game while they're standing in line on their phone, you know, what? And audience.
But Game Pass games don't lend themselves to casual gamers, do they?
No, but I think they're in the middle. They're between casual gamers and me, like that nut that has to play one game.
That's me.
And I'm just super laser focused on this one thing.
And then there's Mary Jo Foley.
Yeah, well, then it's the people.
Does not care.
Yep.
I shouldn't ask Bonnie questions. I'm sorry, Mary Jo.
Please feel free.
But it's an interesting question. And no, this is important because this is a big part of Microsoft's business potentially, this Game Pass thing. And I'm just wondering, is it a natural audience? Or we've seen these things before, and I don't know. I mean, I had the – I actually never stopped paying for it. And maybe that's the secret, the NVIDIA GeForce Go or whatever it was called. It's the same idea, except it's streaming. Yeah. It's not a download like Game Pass.
I would pay NVIDIA never to update my GeForce driver ever again. Is there a service for that? Because that is the most disruptive thing.
I like the Shield a lot. I really do.
NVIDIA Shield, yeah.
It I'm does get updated the all the time.
On
yeah.
the PC.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
have we? I think we've really beat this.
I think you have, really.
Yeah.
It is a new month. I just throw out real quick. Xbox
Live Gold has rotated.
This is another good month for that.
Just throw I have it to out remind there. Myself when the month comes to say rabbit, 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 and to go check and see what the new games are. Those both yep. I have to do those.
First of the month. Yeah.
Our show today brought to you, and then we're going to get to the back of the book with the tips and all of that, and maybe some cringy Microsoft advertising.
Mm-hmm. Wait. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm talking about the twins. But first, let's talk about LastPass. Man, I don't know why anybody who listens to this show or any of our shows is not already using LastPass. Please. I mean, look, you got to use a password vault. Everybody knows that. You've got to use LastPass to generate long, strong, completely random, and for that reason, unmemorable passwords. Not your uncle's birthday and your maiden name. No, that's bad. That's wrong. Something really juicy, good, long, crazy. You would look at it and you won't remember it even if you type it in. Five times. That's a good password. But you say Leo. I know what you're saying. Leo. I can't remember that. Oh, that's the whole point, my friends. Don't write it on a post-it note. Stick it in LastPass. It's a password vault that is second to none. Very strong security. Steve Gibson's vetted it and given it his seal of approval. Almost impossible to brute force a LastPass vault. And that vault, by the way, is only decrypted at the device level, which is really important because it means nobody, not even LastPass, has access to your stuff. Only you do. I trust it so much, I put all my passwords in there, but also my driver's license, my passport, my social security numbers, my SSH keys, my PGP private key. It's all in there because it's safe, it's secure, and I have it now on every device. In fact, I just wiped and set up my Pixel 3 again. And, of course, the very first thing you put on here is LastPass because it auto-fills your apps as you're logging into that. Yeah, I have 417 apps on here. You think I'm going to go one by one and type the passwords in? No. Autofilled. And now on iOS 12, same thing. Autofills makes it so easy. Now, if you, and I'm sure you are, as an individual, have good password hygiene, you're doing all this, right? But if you have a business, are your employees doing all this? And I can tell you as a business owner, they're not. They are the ones writing the password on a post-it note and putting it on the screen. They're the ones using Monkey123 to log into your business account, your checkbook, your database. They're the ones sharing passwords. We know employees, a majority of employees, not only share passwords with other employees, but with people not even at the company. LastPass prevents all that. You have absolute admin oversight, 100 different policies, including setting master password requirements. We require two-factor. Works with a YubiKey, a Duo, a Google Authenticator. Actually, LastPass has a great authenticator app, which is really cool because instead of having to type in digits, you know, like Google Authenticator, it works like the Microsoft Authenticator. It pops up a notification said, are you logging in? Approve, deny. I love that. With LastPass Enterprise, you can also restrict access when somebody leaves the company. This is just like a no-brainer for businesses. LastPass is the number one most preferred password manager, trusted by more than 16.5 million people and 43,000 businesses. So if you use LastPass at home, I don't need to sell you on LastPass, but if you aren't using it in your business, you better get going. LastPass.com/twit. LastPass.com/twit. You could choose from LastPass Premium for the individual use. We use at home LastPass Families.
But there's also LastPass Teams for small teams of 50 or fewer, and then LastPass Enterprise. That's what we use at Twit. And you know what's great is I just did on my iPhone my because I needed to install Office, right? And so I have to use the corporate password, which is not my personal LastPass, but LastPass lets you have, with one login, access to both your personal LastPass and the enterprise LastPass. So I just put that on my phone and my laptop so that I can log into Office. I mean, I can just go on and on. And I shouldn't because, well, I think I got the point across. LastPass Enterprise. Go to LastPass.com/twit and join the 43,000 businesses who use the best password manager of them all. The king, the number one password manager, LastPass.com/twit. And now, the trusted Paul Thurrott with his cringe.
You know, I forgot to mention. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I did achieve Master Prestige last week, by the way.
Oh, my God. We bow to you, Paul Thurrott.
Well,
we bow to you.
Just so we're clear what that means, it's not really a reflection of skill so much as it is time spent playing
yes,
a game.
Let's be honest.
So it's
time wasted, maybe, you mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, we all have different things we'd like to do.
No, I have no judgment. I am not judging you. Honest.
Oh, I'm judging me. It's fine.
Just think, if you had used that time to learn to play the guitar, you'd be... You're playing a Stairway to Heaven right now, so I'm
giving
glad.
A concert.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, that's embarrassing. Anyway, so Microsoft today released a series of videos and also a blog post exhorting its users not to buy Office 2019, which is really funny because that's a Microsoft product.
Isn't that bizarre?
And the rationale there is they make this other thing called Office 365 where you get the same apps, you get an Office 2019, but they're more capable because they're A, they're updated every month, B, they are cloud connected, and then you get all these other capabilities with Office 365, including the ability to install all of these apps and also the mobile apps on multiple computers. You get 1 terabyte of OneDrive storage, you know, kind of goes on and on and on. And I have to say, you know, I agree with this 100%. Well, 100%.
You ready to lose?
Here is the Twins challenge. They brought in a bunch of twins. Both of them have
totally non-scripted.
Yeah, totally non-scripted. Oh crap! What did I do? How did this? How do you even do this? Oh, here are some other twins. It's so confusing. And they gave them Office 2019, the standalone, and Office 365.
Oh man, you're not even. You don't want to see me.
Polish your resume.
Let's do this.
Start a job search. One had the intelligent features in Word, thanks to Office 365. The other had just dumb old Office.
The other one had this piece of junk.
Mom, also how could they do this to themselves?
Bold some of these. I'll just wait for you, I guess. Let's see.
Oh, come on. This is just lame. This is just stupid.
All right, but let's make this a little more pragmatic, right? The videos are whatever they are, but... I looked this up because I stopped thinking about this stuff. And Microsoft still sells Office, right? So.
Yeah.
Office.
All I have to do is put the price of the two of them next to each other. That would do it for me.
Yeah.
That did do it.
$150 bucks for this product. Only for one person now, by the way. Remember, Home and Student used to be multiple PCs? Yeah. This is one person, one computer. The Home and Business version, which, by the way, I couldn't figure out even what the difference was. The side-by-side comparison made them look the same. It's $250. So a year of Office 365 Home is $99. You get all of those apps on for six different people on basically an infinite number of computers. You get all the full power of the Office mobile apps. You get the 1 terabyte of storage. You get 60 minutes of Skype calling per month. I mean, it's just a no-brainer. This is obviously, if you need this stuff, you get Office 365. And somebody kind of went back and forth with me on Twitter. They were saying, well, you know, family of five. I buy five of these things, you know, 150 times five is whatever number, and we're going to use them for 5 years. You know, it's not that much better of a deal to get Office 365. Yes, it is.
Because you're getting
1 terabyte
machines.
Of storage. You're getting multiple. No, it's six. It's six people now, by the way. It's basically an infinite number of computers. You can only have them active on 10 at a time. It's effectively
infinite. You just deactivate one to use it on the other.
You don't have to do anything. They're fine. It just keeps working. It's... it is a no-brainer. And, you know, we talked about Xbox Game Pass because I'll never stop talking about Xbox, Mary Jo. I'm sorry. But it is approaching that level of value, I would say, for what you get for a gamer in that case, you know. But this might be the original no-brainer from Microsoft. It really is.
Well, I just discontinued my Office 365 because I asked Russell, and mm-hmm. I've been paying for a seat on the business version of it for all this time. And what I didn't know, and I just asked him, I said, but does this business, can I install it on multiple computers? Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Same thing.
So the difference.
And I get a terabyte of OneDrive. Yeah.
But the difference for you is, there's a couple of differences. I mean, the slightly different email client on the web, slightly different OneDrive with additional capabilities and complexities on the business side. There is no sense of multi-user, though, with the business version. So when you buy a license for that, it's whatever number of computers you want to use.
On my Mac, on my laptop. Mm.
Yeah, but you can't give it to five other people. But you can't give it to five other people.
No, it's five of me. It's all me.
Yeah, it's five of
my login.
So if you wanted six people to use this thing, you'd have to pay $50 times six.
Right.
Whereas with Office 365 Home, you pay $99.
Yeah,
and it's all set.
Still a good deal. I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I just wanted people to understand the difference.
Right. No, important. Yes. Important distinction.
So, app pick wise, Google this week, you want to notice there were a bunch of security announcements this week, Google, Microsoft, and other companies. This was tied to, I think, what do they call it? Internet Safety Day, I guess, was Monday. So Google, actually both of my picks are tied to that. So, Google announced an extension for Chrome called Password Checkup, which will examine the passwords you've used recently and then the ones you're using as you go to make sure they weren't part of one of those data breaches where, some huge number of passwords were apparently leaked online and they just want to make sure you're safe and so forth. And they will give you security notifications as well.
Installed it instantly.
Yeah, I did too. This is the no-brainer as well. Tied to this Microsoft Authenticator, which is the authenticator app I do use on my phone, picked up security notifications of its own. And that's actually really useful because obviously it puts up those notifications when you're trying to do a sign-in and you need to use 2FA or whatever. But now it will prompt you. I'm going to read the list here. Sorry. Every time I open my screen, my face lights up. But let me see if I can find it. What is the list of things? I'll just sit here and read my own article until I find it, I guess. God. So basically, if there's suspicious behavior against your account, it will pop something up. And if it's not you, you can then resolve it from
changing
there.
Changing your password, adding a new phone number, or email address, signing in from a new device or unusual location.
God bless you. Thank you.
All of those things.
all of those things.
Yeah.
So
makes sense.
Also, super smart to use.
Yes. I actually really like the Microsoft Authenticator. But you can only use it with Microsoft products. I kind of almost wish it was like Google Authenticator.
No. You can add other ones.
Oh, you can. So it's just like Google. It's a time-based one-time password. Oh, okay.
Yep.
Oh, so I don't have to use Google anymore. Okay, good.
Nope. No, they're interchangeable. What do you use, an iPhone?
iPhone and a Pixel 3 and a Note 9.
So
and an iPad.
Yeah, so on a Pixel 3 or a Google phone, those things, the Google authentication stuff is kind of seamless. You don't have to use the app. And I love that.
Oh.
On an iPhone, you can kind of do it, but you have to use a Google app. So literally the Google app. I think it works through Gmail too, you can use Authenticator. So what I found on an iPhone is I actually have to run the app sometimes to make it pop up, and it's a little, you know, less seamless. But if you're using an Android phone, it's awesome.
Does the Microsoft Authenticator save your accounts across devices, or do I have to redo it each device? Do you know what I'm saying? For those third-party devices? I use Authy for that reason because I do it once with Authy.
Here's the deal. It does it on... I hope I got this right. I think it does it on iOS only.
Okay.
And that's obviously, I'm sure that will change, but.
That's handy.
Yeah, that's a big thing. If you have a list of 10 accounts.
Yeah, you don't want to
closing one and opening. Yeah, that's is a huge pain. I think on Android it doesn't. I'm sure it will eventually. I think I've got that right. I think it works on iOS, but not on Android.
Cool. And it's free.
Yep. Yeah, it's great.
All right. I think we should take it over to the distaff side for our enterprise pick of the week.
We need to pinch Mary Jo. Is she still with us?
I'm awake. I'm awake.
Hello, Mary Jo.
I'm sorry.
I have kind of an interesting enterprise pick of the week. It's something we heard about at Ignite last September, and we've heard absolutely nothing about it since. The Microsoft Managed Desktop. So if you remember what this was, it kind of freaked people out at the time when it was announced. It was the idea that Microsoft would actually sell, would provision your computers. They'd manage your Windows 10 updates for you. They'd like handle it like they are your systems integrator, and you can just sit back and let them run your show.
Oh, I like that.
Sounds good in theory. Some people didn't like the idea, like, I don't want Microsoft controlling my desktop. Or other people were like, I don't want this to be Windows 365, which it's not. But I was trolling around in Microsoft Docs the other day, docs.microsoft.com, and I kind of just came upon Microsoft Managed Desktop in the documentation. There's a ton of new stuff in there that hasn't been announced or formally introduced. But if you're somebody who's like, hey, whatever happened to that Microsoft Managed Desktop thing, you should go look in the Docs site, because they've got a number of subsections now that explain things that were kind of sketchy when they announced it and we didn't really know how it would work. They've got a section about what does it mean to be a device as a service, IT as a service? What are the prerequisites? How do you add an admin contact? There's even a change history page in it showing you all the things they've added to this site since they announced this. And there's quite a bit of new sections and content that you can click on inside the change history page. So if you're somebody who is wondering, hey, whatever happened to that? Or if you're somebody who's like, hey, this sounds like a kind of an interesting idea, you should go check out the updated docs for Microsoft Managed Desktop.
Does this require an enterprise license?
It uses Windows 10 Enterprise as part of Microsoft 365. Yeah, so, it's not for normal people.
Not for
businesses.
Like if you're the IT guy for your family or something, you wouldn't.
Nah. So far, this is a big business type offering. But you could imagine one day, just like they're going to do Microsoft 365 Consumer, maybe they would do Microsoft Managed Desktop Consumer.
I think that would be a good idea. That would be a good idea. Enterprise pick number two.
Right. This is a feature that's not brand new to Windows 10, but I feel like we don't talk about it a lot, and some people may not even know it's there. I'm talking about Quick Assist in Windows 10. So if you knew what remote assistance was in previous versions of Windows, the successor to that is called Quick Assist. On Petri.com this week, there's a nice, succinct little tutorial about how do you set this up and how do you use it. So if you're a business, you could use this to do remote support for a remote office. Or if you're a normal person, you could do it to provide remote support.
What are you trying to say, Mary Jo?
You're not a nerd.
Yeah. If you're a normal, you might want to use this to help your parents. Like I'm thinking about my mom here, especially, who when I say, Mom, click on Internet Explorer, she's like, what do you mean? I don't know what that is.
Right.
Nice. So you could use it for that, too. If she were on Windows 10, she's not on Windows 10 yet, but that's going to have to happen by January next year. So yeah, Quick Assist, if you kind of are rusty about it or never heard about it or want to see a really easy, fast tutorial, go to Petri.com and they've got a little post up there about that.
And now in the continuing saga of Mary Jo Foley learning to speak Dutch.
I know, man.
Our beer of the week.
When I made this a pick, I'm like, I'm going to butcher every part of this beer pick, but it's worth it.
Actually, this might be Flemish.
I know. The beer pick is West Valletteren 12. How did I do on that? West Valletteren 12.
There's just a random consonant stuck
there's
in the
so
middle of that word.
So many consonants in there.
It's got to be Flemish. This can't be Dutch. Dutch is more vowel focused.
You may have heard of this beer, though. It's at one point not long ago, it was voted the best beer in the world.
Oh, yeah. It's a Belgian. Okay.
It's a Belgian.
A quadruple.
Quad. Ooh, 10. 0.2%. So, I got to have it during the Super Bowl.
Oh,
when I was
fun.
Luckily, I had this beer to look forward to because the rest of it was pretty boring.
you were swacked by the time there was any scoring, but that's
I was.
Okay.
I'm like, hey, who cares what the score is?
People, you non-football fans, be quiet.
Oh, you Patriot fan.
But this beer, West Veleteren 12 from the St. Sixtus Brewery. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce that in Dutch or whatever.
it's got to be Flemish because it's in Belgium.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a Trappist beer. It's a quad, which means dark fruits, brown sugar, really smooth and delicious. So easy to drink.
I love Belgian triples. What is this one better?
You would love this.
This is 33% better, Leo.
It's a quad.
What are we tripling or quadding? Is it the hops? No.
Actually, they're quite different. Triples and quads.
Yeah, I know. I should know this right off the top of my head. What makes a quad?
Triples
a quad?
Are like eating chocolate cake. So this is just more like that.
So I think of quads as being more like those Brandywine beers. Barley wine beers.
They are that alcoholic.
Yeah, because they've got that real sugary kind of thick kind of quality to them.
They have like a spicy quality in a good way, not like a fruitcake way.
It's not made with high fructose corn syrup, is it?
Yeah, it has no corn syrup, surprisingly, unlike other beers that shall not be named.
We won't have to send the dragon into
burn
into a
crisp. I wouldn't drink that beer if you paid me, but I give them credit for going after corn syrup.
That was pretty awesome.
I thought that was fantastic.
Talking about the Super Bowl ads for Bud Light.
Yes, yeah. That was fantastic.
Although it made so many people mad, but that was kind of fun. So people,
who's defending corn syrup? Mad.
It made the
corn industry, liquid sugar, probably the single biggest contributor to American obesity.
It's not sugar by the time you drink the beer. That's turning into alcohol. It's just I presume
they make it with corn syrup, Leo.
By the time beer is made you drink of it, it's
beer
alcohol.
Is made from barley.
Well, yeah. Any starch will ferment.
Yes, but if it's beer,
it's barley. Yeah.
Yeah. But this is not that. A quad is the 180 degree opposite of a beer with corn syrup.
Yes, it is. That's true. Yes.
So
that's
bottled and you were able to find it in
Yes, one of my friends brought it to a little Super Bowl party and I was like, "Yes, let's break that out." It was lovely.
West Veleteren. From Abbey Quadruple, West Veleteren, Abbey Dige, 666.
Yes. I'm glad you did that, not me.
My Flemish,
I can't believe you
rusty.
Found this in the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my friend brought it back from Europe. Can find it sometimes in the United States.
Yeah.
Look at that bottle. It looks like it's actually been stored in an abbey since the 12th century.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's good. And you can't beat the score. literally.
100. It's 100 on rape beer in 100. Every way.
Holy cow.
It's definitely one of the smoothest beers I've had. Like you would never know it was 10% ever.
Well, a couple of minutes later you would know.
I gotta find me some of this.
Yeah. I know. By the end, after like if you drank a whole one of those, you would definitely not know.
I'm going off carbs in a couple of weeks and I don't
Are you really?
I need
oh man.
To drink all the beer I can now.
Yeah. Yep. Mm. So yeah, that's my beer pick. It's not easy to find, but if you ever get a chance to try it, it's worth finding.
Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, you are just the darlings of the Windows set.
I've been called that so many times.
Everybody says that. You'll find Mary Jo Foley at her ZDNet blog. Easy place to get to, allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, thurrogood.com. And his books are at leanpub.com, including the Field Guide to Windows 10. And together, they make the dynamic duo of Redmond, Washington. All you have to do is tune in every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC, and you can watch us live at twit.tv/live. We've got audio and video streams. You can also join us in the chat room. If you're there live, join in the fun at irc.twit.tv. And I should point out that even though I mention every time you can get us live, really, you can, most people, it's a podcast. The idea is on demand. Listen at your leisure. And there are many ways to do that. Start at our website, twit.tv/ww. Or subscribe. You know, if you subscribe in your favorite podcast application, then you'll get it kind of automatically the minute it's available Wednesday afternoon.
Let's not forget Spotify. They're making an all-out push for podcasts, aren't they?
Yep. Do you think we're at peak podcast in terms of it? You know, all the new content and whatnot.
So let them know that you listen, subscribe to the podcast in Spotify. Even if you don't ever listen in Spotify, just at least subscribe to it. Or Overcast or Pocket Cast or iTunes or Google Podcasts or on and on and on. A subscription is the best way to send a signal to the man upstairs that you like Windows Weekly. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Have a great week.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Thank you.
On Windows Weekly.